Red Arms, give it your all.
We'll drink the wine till the cup is dry, and kiss the girl so they'll not cry, and toss the dice until we fly, and dance with Jack of the Shadows.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Tales of Red Arm. I'm your host, Justin, and today we are jumping into Chapter 34, He Who Comes with the Dawn. And we are taking the position of Rand's perspective. And Rand and Matt are jogging out of Ruidian and back into the Waste. Now, the floor of the Waste is still a bit dark because they're kind of in a bit of a valley. But there's a little bit of a breeze, and it actually feels cool when he doesn't wear his coat. But it's not going to last because once daylight hits, it's going to be blistering hot. And so they're trying to, like, get back to the Aiel tents before, you know, the temperature gets the better of them. So Matt's next to Rand in kind of a pain shamble. His coat's hanging open, his unlaced shirt's stuck to his chest with drying blood, and he's gingerly touching the thick wheel around his throat, wheel being like a rope mark from being hanged. But he stumbles on, just growling under his breath, even though it's like that rope mark is practically black. But he catches himself as he stumbles with the odd black hafted spear. And clutches at his head, which I can understand. But he didn't complain, which was a bad sign. Matt was a great complainer at small discomforts. If he is silent now, it must mean he is in real pain. But Rand's old half-healed wound in his side felt like it was getting bored into by something. And the gashes on his face and his head burned. And he just lumbered along, half-hunched over his aching side. But he hardly thought of his own hurts. He was very conscious of the sun rising behind him and the Aiel waiting on the bare mountainside ahead. That's where they were going to get water and shade, and definitely help for Matt is the most important. The rising sun behind and the Aiel ahead. Dawn and the Aiel. Man, I'm doing it again today. He who comes with the dawn. That Aes Sedai he had seen or dreamed of he had seen before Ruidian had spoken as if she had the foretelling. He will bind you together, he will take you back and destroy you. Words delivered like prophecy. Destroy them. Prophecy, he said, would break the world. Again. And that concept horrified him. Perhaps he could escape that part, but war, death, and destruction always welled up in his footsteps. Tyr was the first place in what seemed like a very long time where he had not left chaos behind, men dying and villages burning. He found himself wishing he could climb on Jedin, his horse, and run as fast as the stallion could carry him. And it wasn't the first time. But he realizes he can't run, that he has to do it because nobody else who can do it. He does it, or the Dark One wins. But why would I destroy the Aiel, and how would I do that? This is what is his thoughts. But the last thought chilled him. It was much like accepting that he would and that he should. And I guess the real question for everyone listening is, how does one destroy the Aiel? Is it complete annihilation of them so not a single one lives? Is it something else? How is the prophecy meant to be, well, understood? Prophecies rarely are cut and dry. It's something that they rarely just tell you how it is, and then that's how it is. And it's not like you're going to go pick up a cup of water and you're going to drink it. That's not what prophecy is. It's very hidden, mixed, if you will. So, if that's the case, how should one take this particular prophecy? He will bind you together and he will take you back and destroy you. Speaking of the Aiel, obviously. But he's like, Light, I don't want to destroy anybody. Matt glanced at him silently, a little bit wary, and Rand's like, I'm not mad yet. But above them, up the slope, the Aiel are starting to stir in the three camps. The cold fact was, he needed him, or them, and that was why he had begun to contemplate this back when he first discovered that the Dragon Reborn and He Comes with the Dawn might well be one and the same. He needed people he could trust, people who followed him from something besides fear of him or greed of power, people who did not mean to use him for their own ends. He had done what was required, and now he would use them because he had to. He wasn't mad yet, at least he doesn't think he is, but many would think so before he's done. Full glaring sunlight overtook them before they began to scramble up Cheyenne, heat like a club. Rand climbed the uneven slope as fast as he could manage, with its dips and rises and rough outcrops. His throat had forgotten its last drink. The sun dried his shirt and the sweat as fast as he could moisten it. Matt didn't need any urging either. There's water up there. Bear stood in front of the Wise One's low tents, a water bag in her hands, glistening with condensation. Rand licked his cracked lips. He's sure he could see the glisten. A shout of, "Where is he? What have you done with him?" And the roar stopped Rand in his tracks, and the flame-haired man, Cooladin, stood atop a thick thumb of granite jutting out of the mountain. Others of the Shadow Clan clustered around its base, all looking at Rand and Matt, some veiled. He's like, "Who are you talking about?" Cooladin's eyes bulged in outrage. He says, "Mirrodin, Wetlander, he entered 2 days before you, yet you came out first. He could not fail where you survive. You must have murdered him." I mean, that's a leap of logic. You beat a guy in a race. You must clearly have murdered that person. It's the only way. It's the only explanation. Nothing else makes sense. But Rand thinks he hears a shout from the Wise One tents, but before he could blink, Cooladin uncoiled like a snake, casting a spear straight at him. Two more streaked behind it from the Aiel at the base of the granite thumb. But Rand snatched for Saidin in the flame-carved sword, and the blade whirled in his hands, Whirlwind on the Mountain, aptly named, slicing a pair of the spear shafts in two. Matt's spinning black spear just barely knocked the third side. Cooladin howls, "Proof! They entered Ruidi unarmed! It is forbidden. Look at the blood on them. They have murdered Mirrodin." I mean, all of that was a giant leap in logic, or lack thereof. But he throws another spear, but this time it was one of a dozen. Rand throws himself to the side, and Matt leaping the other direction. But before they even hit the ground, the spears came together where Rand had been standing, bouncing off each other. Rolling to his feet, he found the spears all stuck into the stony ground, in a perfect circle surrounding the spot he had jumped from. But even Cooladin seemed stunned to stillness for a second. Bear, the Wise One, shouts, "Stop!" running down in the motionless instant, and her long, bulky skirt impeded her no more than her age. She bounded down the slope like a girl for all of her white hair, and a girl in a fury at that. She yells at Cooladin about the peace of Ruidian, and her thin voice was an iron rod. "Twice you have tried to break it now. Once more, and you are outlawed. My word on it. You and anyone else who lifts a hand." And she jumps in front of Rand, facing the shadow with the water bag raised as if she meant to bludgeon them with it. "Let who doubts me raise a weapon. That one will be deprived of shade according to the agreement of Ruidian, denied hold or stand or tent. His own sept will hunt him as a wild beast." Now, this may seem like harsh punishment, if you will. More reasonable people would be like, that's not that harsh, considering that there's an agreement between the clans, and this guy is just begging, absolutely begging to break it. So one could argue it'd be his own fault if he did something stupid. And it wouldn't be very much of a reach, let's put it that way. But even then, some of the Shido unveiled their faces, a couple of them. But Cooladin was not dissuaded. And he's like, "They are armed, Bear. They went to Ruidian, that is." And Bear's like, "Silence! You dare speak of weapons? You who would break the peace of Ruidian and kill with your face bare to the world." That's two crimes right there, by the way. "They took no weapons with them. I attest to it." And she turns her back and looks over Rand and Matt, which is hardly softer than what she'd given Cooladin. And she grimaces at Matt's strange sword-bladed spear, muttering, "Did you find that in Ruidian, boy?" And Matt growls back hoarsely, I was given it, old woman. I paid for it, and I mean to keep it. She sniffs. He's like, you both look like you'd rolled in knife grass. What? Tell me later. She eyes Rand's power rot sword, and she shivers. And he's like, get rid of that. Show them the signs before that fool Cooladin tries to whip them up again. And with his temper on him, he would take on his whole clan into outlawry without blinking. Quickly. And he's just gaping at her like, signs? But then he remembers what Ruark had shown him once. The mark of a man who had survived Ruidion. Letting the sword vanish, he unlaced his left shirt cuff and pushed back the sleeve to his elbow. Around his forearm wound a shape like that on Dragon Banner. A sinuous golden-maned form scaled in scarlet and gold. He expected it, of course, but it was still a shock. The thing looked like a part of his skin, as though that non-existent creature itself had settled into him. His arm felt no different, yet the scales sparkled in the sunlight like polished metal. It seemed as if he touched the golden mane atop his wrist, he would surely feel each hair. He thrust his arm into the air as soon as it was bare, high so Cooladin and his people could see. Mutters rose among the Shido. Cooladin snarled wordlessly. The numbers around the granite outcrop were swelling as more Shido came running from their tents. Ruark stood with Harn and his Jindo a little upslope. They watched the Shido warily and ran with an air of expectation. His uplifted arm did not lessen. Lan stood halfway between the two groups, hand resting on his sword hilt. Face a thunderhead. Now, one might wonder why his face is a thunderhead, and no, it's not because Rand raised his arm. He has other potential issues, which we will get to quite shortly. So, Rand begins to realize the Aiel wanted a little bit more. Egwene and the other three wise women reached him, scrambling down the mountains, and the Aiel woman looked like out of countenance at having to hurry up, every bit as angry as Bear had been. Amys directed her glares at Cooladin, while sun-haired Melaine stared blamingly at Rand. Sianna just seemed ready to chew rocks. Egwene, with a scarf wrapped around her hair and spread over her shoulders, stared at Matt and him half in consternation and half as though she expected never to see them again. Bear gets a little upset and just goes, "Fool man, all of the signs!" And she tosses the water bag to Matt, seizes Rand's right arm, and stripped back its sleeve, exposing a mirror twin of the creature on his left forearm. Her breath caught, then came out in a long sigh, seeming balanced on a razor's edge between relief and apprehension. There was no mistaking it. She had hoped for the second marking, yet it made her afraid. Amys and the other two wise women echoed her sign almost exactly, and it was odd to see Aiel fearful. Now, this is one of those things where it's almost better for them because they know that this is happening or that it's going to happen eventually. They have other previous signs and things that lead them to this particular expectation, if you will. And it's a realization of, so it is true. So this is what's going to happen. But it's better to be of that time and be able to try to deal with it and keep everything from going sideways and failing miserably. Or you wish it upon somebody else down the line, kick the can down the road, so to speak. But the wise women, or the wise ones specifically, are long-lived. So some of them might deal with it later anyway. So it's better to have all their heads together and try to protect as many people. Because if they kick the can down the road, they might not be protecting their people as well. You never know. But Rand almost laughs, but not because he was amused. Twice and twice shall he be marked. That was the prophecies of the dragon said. A heron branded into each palm, and now these. One of the peculiar creatures, dragons, the prophecy called them, was supposed to be for remembrance lost. Ruidion had certainly supplied that, the lost history of the Aiel's origins. And the other was for the price he must pay. But he wonders how soon he must pay it, and how many have to pay it with him. Others always had to, even when he tried to pay alone. Bear didn't pause before shoving the arm above his head, proclaiming him loudly, "Behold what has never been seen before. A Kara Karn has been chosen. A chief of chiefs. Born of a maiden, he has come with the dawn from Meridian, according to prophecy, to unite the Aiel. The fulfillment of prophecy has begun." The reactions of the other Aiel were nothing like what Rand had envisioned. Culloden stared down at him, even more hatefully now than before, if it was possible, but leaped down from the outcrop and stalked away to the slope to vanish in the shadow tents. The shadow themselves began to disperse, glancing at Rand with unreadable faces before drifting back to the tents. Harren and the warriors of the Jindo Sept, hardly hesitating, did the same. In moments, only Ruark remained, his eyes troubled. Lan went over to the clan chief. From his face, the warder was just soon not seen Rand at all. But Rand was not sure what he was expecting, but he surely something other than this. And Matt's like, "Burn me!" He just realized for the first time he had the water bag in his hands and jerks the plug free, holds it high, lets it nearly as much splash over his face as on his mouth, but he lowers it. He looks at the marking on Rand's arms again and shook his head and just repeats, "Burn me!" again, as he pushed the sloshing bag to him. Rand's staring at the Aiel in consternation. He's like, "What? What's going on?" But he was more than glad to drink, and the first gulps hurt his throat. It was so dry. And Egwene's like, "What happened to you? Did Mirrodin attack you?" And then Bear interjects, "It's forbidden to speak of what occurs in Ruidian." Rand's like, "Not Mirrodin. Where's Moraine? I expected her to be the first to meet us. For once, I won't care if she asks before she heals me." And Matt's like, "Me either." And he's holding himself up by his spear as he sways and press the heel of his palm against his forehead. "My brain is spinning." And Egwene's like, "She is still in Ruidian, I suppose. But if you have finally come out, maybe she will as well. She went right after you in Avienda. You've been gone so long." And he's like, "Moraine went to Ruidian and Avienda? What did you..." But then he understands what's going on. And he's like, "What do you mean, so long?" And she's like, "This is the seventh day. The seventh day since you all went down in the valley." And he drops the water bag... And Sianna snatches it up before more than a little of its contents, so precious in the waste, could trickle away down the stony slope. But Rand didn't notice. 7 days. Anything could have happened in 7 days. They could be catching up to me, figuring out what I'm planning. I've got to move, and fast. I have to keep ahead of them. I haven't come this far to fail. They were staring at him, even Ruark and Matt, concern writ large on their faces. And caution. No wonder that. Who knows what he might do, or how sane he still was, but Lan didn't change his stony scowl. And Matt's like, "I told you that was Avienda, bare as she was born." "How long before Moraine comes back?" Rand asks. He's like, "Well, if she hasn't returned by the 10th day, she won't. No one has ever returned after 10 days. Another 3 days. Maybe, maybe more." 3 days more than what he had already lost, 7. "Let them come now. I will not fail." He's like, "You can channel. One of you can anyway. I saw you flung Culloden about. Will you heal Matt?" Amice and Melaine exchanged looks that only looked rueful. Amice regretfully said, "Our paths have gone other ways. There are wise ones who could do what you ask after a fashion, but we are not among them." This is important because it means that just because one person can channel does not mean they know everything that everybody else knows or is capable of everything that everybody else is capable of. And in some situations, we've already kind of seen this in the White Tower, where we have different Aes Sedai of different power strengths. We have different Ajahs that specialize in specific things. And if they're not specializing in it, they're probably not very good at it. It's the general gist, if you will. So, Rand, not really knowing this, because again, he wasn't at the White Tower. He doesn't know as much about the Aes Sedai, or the Aiel, I guess. But he doesn't understand this kind of stuff because he's kind of been self-taught his whole time. He's kind of doing what he's got to do. He's not exactly living the life of infinite knowledge at this point. So he's like, what do you mean? You channel like Aes Sedai. Why can't you heal like them? You did not want him to go to Rurian in the first place. Do you think you can let him die from it? And Matt's like, I'll survive. I'm not dead yet. But Egwene puts a hand on Rand's arms. Like, not all Aes Sedai can heal very well. The best healers are Yellow Aja. Shiryam, the mistress of novices, cannot heal anything much more serious than a bruise or a small cut. No two women can have exactly the same talents or skills. And this is true, but not true at the same time. For one, there's no way she should be able to know that unless she was taught that in a class. And that class might not be particularly accurate, considering the way that Aes Sedai are. I mean, you have the Yellow Ajahs got tons of healers. They have the same skill? Like, I mean, it should be obvious. Unless she's meaning, like, their entire lineup kit is not the same. That might be true. But there's not a whole lot of, you know, well, this person can do this. Nobody else can. And plus, just because you can channel does not mean everything you channel is a talent. A talent is specifically a capital T. And that's things like foretelling, like specialist stuff, dreaming. Rand's kind of annoyed by her tone. He was not a pettish child to be soothed down, but he frowns at the wise ones. Could not or would not, Matt and him would have to wait for Moraine. If she hadn't been killed by that bubble of evil, by the dust creatures, it should have dissipated by now, but there had to have been an end to the one in Tyr. It's like, they wouldn't have stopped her. She could channel her way out of them. She knows what she's doing, and she doesn't have to figure out an inch at a time the way I do. But why had she gone in the first time? 100 people could have been in Ruidian without being seen. Too many questions, and no answers till she did return, even if then. But Sianna offers herbs and ointments by taking them out of the sun and that they would tend to the injuries. And Rand's like, yeah, let's get out of the sun. And he recognizes he's being a stubborn mule, but he doesn't care. Why had Moraine gone to Ruidian? He didn't trust her to stop pushing him in the direction she thought best, and the Dark One take his opinions. But if she's in there, could she have affected what he saw, changed it in some way, if she even suspected what he planned? And this is where he's getting even a little outrageous for the average person in his position, if they were in his position. Obviously they're not. But he turned and head towards the Jindo tents. Gul'dan's people were probably not going to offer him a resting place. But Amis turned him towards the flat farther up where the Wise One's tent stood. They might not be ready for you just yet. And Ruark, next to her, nodded in agreement. Mullane glanced at Lan. This is no business of yours, Annaline. You and Ruark take Matrimon. And Rand's like, nope, I want them with me. Maybe because he wanted answers from the clan chief and partly because of sheer stubbornness. These wise ones were all set to guide him around on a leash, just like Moraine. He was not about to put up with it. They looked at one another, then nodded as if acquiescing to his request. And if they thought he would be a good boy because they gave him a sweet, they were mistaken. I'd have thought you'd all be with Moraine. Or I thought you'd be with Moraine, he tells Lan, ignoring the wise ones and their nods. And Lan's a little embarrassed. And it flashes across his face, and he's like, well, the wise ones managed to hide her going until nearly sunrise, or sunset, he said stiffly. Then they convinced me following would serve no purpose. Even if I did, they told me I could not find her until she was already on her way out, and she would not need me then. I'm no longer certain I should have listened. Melaine's like, listened? And her gold and ivory bracelets clattered as she adjusted her shawl irritably. Trust a man to make himself sound reasonable. You would have almost certainly have died and very likely killed her, too. Belaine and I had to hold him down half the night before he would listen, Ami said. Her small smile was a touch amused and a touch wry. But Lan's face might as well have been carved from thunderclouds. Small wonder if the wise ones had used the power on him. What was Moraine doing in there? He's just really concerned. But it's funny with... I've been trying to rack my brain, trying to think... What in Ruidian would have killed Lan just from him being there? Now, if he had gone through the rings, that might have killed him. But he didn't have to go through the rings. That's the kicker. He didn't have to go in the rings. Being just like putting your foot down in a city does not kill you inherently unless there's something in there that will kill you inherently. But everything we know about Ruidian is that those who cannot deal with the past of the Aiel are the ones who die because they can't handle it. They can't admit that's where they came from. But if you don't participate in the rings, you don't get that. So it's just like, eh? Now, could he have died from starvation or this or that? Maybe. There could be like natural things that would have killed him, I guess. I mean, he wouldn't have had any water probably. And unless Rand popped it open for everybody. But again, they went in different places and the city is huge. Like, huge. And like Rand had mentioned earlier, is that you could have 100 people go in there and never run into each other. Because it's just this massive place. But Rand asks Ruark how he's supposed to unite the Aiel when they don't want to look at him. He's like, these things, these dragon scaling, the dragon scales glittering in the harsh sunlight, these things say I'm he who comes at the dawn, but everyone practically melted away as soon as I showed the things. And Ruark gives some kind of powerful messaging. It is one thing to know prophecy will be fulfilled eventually, the clan chief said slowly. Another to see that fulfillment begun before your eyes. It is said you will make the clans one people again, as long ago. But we have fought one another almost as long as we have fought the rest of the world. And there is more for some of us. And he hears the whole, he will bind you together and destroy you. And that's what Ruark was referencing. And the other clan chiefs and the wise ones would have also have known this as well. Rand asks, you know, does everyone see the same thing inside those columns, Ruark? And Melaine just snaps out, no! And her eyes like green steel. Be silent or send Annalyn and Matrim away. You must go too, Egwene. And Amys is like, it's not permitted, but a slightly softer voice, to speak of what occurs within Ruidian except with those who have been there. Maybe smaller fraction. Even then, few speak of it and seldom. Rand's like, I mean to change what is permitted and what isn't. Become used to it. He caught Egwene muttering about him needing his ears boxed and grinned at her. Egwene can stay too, since she asked so nicely. She sticks her tongue out at him, then blushed when she realized what she had done. Ruark is like, change. You know that he brings change, Amys. It is wondering what change and how that makes us like children alone in the dark. Since it must be, let it begin now. No two clan chiefs I have spoken with have seen through exactly the same eyes, Rand, or exactly the same things, until the sharing of water and the meeting where the agreement of Ruidian was made. Whether it is the same for wise ones, I do not know, but I suspect it is. I think it is a matter of bloodlines. I believe I saw through the eyes of my ancestors and you yours. Which we basically gathered, you know, the ancestral bloodline thing. We didn't necessarily call it the bloodline thing, but it's pretty obvious. Like, he was this person who's his ancestor. He was this person who's his ancestor all the way down the line. Like, it's pretty obvious. But the wise ones glowered in grimly sullen silence, and Matt and Egwene were confused, and Lan didn't seem to be looking, but he looked kind of inwards, no doubt in worry over Moraine, probably wondering what she's going to be seeing. But Rand feels a little strange himself, seeing through his ancestor's eyes. But he had known for some time that Tam Althor wasn't his real father, and that he had been found as a newborn on the slopes of Dragonmount after the last major battle of the Aiel War. A newborn with his dead mother, a maiden of the spear. He had claimed Aiel blood and demanding admittance to Ruidian, but the fact of it was just now being driven home. His ancestors. Aiel. He's like, then you saw Ruidian just begin building too. And the two Aes Sedai, you heard what one of them said. The he will destroy you line. And Ruark looked resigned, like a man who had learned his leg had to be cut off. He's like, I heard. I know. Then Rand changed it. He's like, what was the sharing of water? And Ruark's eyebrows lifted in surprise. Oh, you didn't recognize it? But then I don't see why you should. You have not grown up with the histories. According the oldest stories, from the day of the breaking of the world began until the day we first entered the Threefold Land, only one people did not attack us. One people allowed us water freely when it was needed. It took us long to discover who they were. That is done with now. The Pledge of Peace was destroyed. The Tree Killers spat in our faces. And Rand's like, oh, you're talking about Kyrian and Evan Doldera. And Layman cutting down the tree. Ruark just gave a flat response of, Layman is dead for his punishment. The Oathbreakers are done with. But then he looks at Rand sideways and is like, some, like Culloden, take it proof we can trust no one who is not Aiel. That is part of why he hates you. Part of it. He will take your face and blood for lies. Or claim he does. Rand shook his head. Moraine sometimes talked of the complexity of age lace, the pattern of an age woven by the wheel of time from the thread of human lives. If the ancestors of Kyrian had not allowed the Aiel to have water 3,000 years ago, then Kyrian would never have been given the right to use the silk path across the waste with a cutting from Avendasora for a pledge. No pledge, and King Layman would have had no tree to cut down, and there would have been no Aiel war, and he could not have been born on the side of Dragonmount to be carried off and raised in the Two Rivers. How many more points like that had there been, where a single decision one way or another affected the weave of the pattern for thousands of years? 1,000 times 1,000 tiny branches points, 1,000 times that many, all twitching the pattern into a different design. He himself was a walking branching point, and maybe Matt and Perrin too. What they did or did not do would send ripples ahead through the years, throughout the ages. And this is where it gets a little confusing, but it's also like, this is probably the best explanation probably in the entire series about like how the pattern operates. Because we kind of understand that, you know, like the butterfly effect of a single action that triggers something else, which triggers something else, and it's like a domino effect of a whole bunch of things happening. But it's another thing entirely to have it basically explained that basically if one thing didn't happen, then this other thing didn't happen, and this other thing didn't happen. And one might be able to argue, maybe, that it could still get there a different route. But to know what that route is would be to know what would be available to have that happen at that time. And a whole bunch of other things would have had to happen, and you just can't possibly know what that is. But you can take what has happened, which is what happens here about the whole Kyrian not giving them water. And it's like, if they hadn't done that, then they wouldn't have had this, they wouldn't have had that, they wouldn't have had that, and they wouldn't have this. And it goes all the way back to basically him not existing. And if he doesn't exist, well, then there's no stopping the Dark One. At least according to the prophecies, that's how that works. But one could argue that it would still get there, just would have gotten there a different way. Maybe. We don't know. Maybe the Aiel wouldn't have survived. Maybe they would have died in the wastes because they didn't have water. Maybe they don't turn into the military powerhouse that they are. Maybe they don't have this, that, or the other. Like, there's so many things that could split off into and be like, you know, this all could have been completely different. But it's kind of a cool concept. I think it was done very well. Robert Jordan masterfully dealt with this. There might be other areas that don't seem as sharply done, but overall, it's very well done. So Rand sees Matt hobbling up the slope with the aid of a spear, head down, eyes squinting in pain. He's like, well, the creator could not have been thinking to set the future on the shoulders of 3 farm boys. I can't drop it. I have to carry the load, whatever the cost. But they get to the Wise One's low, wall-less tents, and the women ducked inside with murmurs about water and shade. They practically pulled Matt with them, as evidence of how his head and throat hurt. He not only obeyed, but he did so silently. Which I love that line. It's just like, yeah, he listened, and he did it without complaining or saying anything. contesting it. Which just shows he's in bad shape. So. As Ran goes to follow, Lan stops him and asks if he saw Moraine in there. And he's like, no, Lan, I'm sorry, I didn't. She'll come out safe if anyone can. Lan just grunts, takes his hand away. Watch out for Cooladin, Rand. I've seen his kind before. Ambition burns in his belly, and he would sacrifice the world to achieve it. Ruark agrees with Lan, says, Annalyn speaks the truth. The dragons on your arm will not matter if you are dead before the clan chiefs learn of them. I will make sure son of Harn's Jindo are always near you until we reach Cold Rocks. Even then, Cooladin will probably try to make trouble. And the Shido, at least, will follow him. Perhaps others too. The prophecy of Ruidion said that you would be raised by those who are not of the blood. Yet Cooladin may not be the only one to see only a Wetlander. That's one of those silly things, is like, futuristically, there will be an event that takes place, and you need to remember this line. The prophecy of Ruidion said you would be raised of those who are not of the blood. That is a very important line that will come up at some point. So remember that one. Tuck it away for later. Rand's like, I'll try to watch my back. Because in the story, when somebody fulfills a prophecy, everyone cried, behold, or something. But that was except for dealing with the villains. Real life did not seem to work that way. But they enter the tent, and Matt's already seated on a gold-tasseled red cushion with his coat and shirt off, and a woman in a cowled white robe, Guyshine, had finished washing the blood from his face and was beginning on his chest. Amice gripped a stone mortar between her knees, blending some ointments with a pestle, while Bear and Sianna had their heads together over herbs, brewing in a pot of hot water. Malayne grimaced at Lan and Ruark, then fixed on Ran with cool green eyes. So stripped to the waist. The cuts on your head do not seem to be bad, but let me see what has you hunched over. She struck a small brass gong. Another white-robed woman ducked in the back of the tent, a streaming silver basin in her hands and cloth over her arm. Rand sat down, sitting himself up straight. There's nothing to worry yourself about. The second woman in white knelt gracefully to his side, resisting his efforts to take the damp cloth she wrung out in the basin, began gently washing his face. He wondered who she was. She looked Aiel, but certainly didn't act like it. Her gray eyes held a determined meekness. Egwene explained to Malayne, the sun-haired wise one, it is an old injury. Moraine had never been able to heal it properly. She gave Rand the common courtesy she would have made him tell as much. But from the glances of the wise ones, though, he thought she had said more than enough already. A wound Aes Sedai could not heal. That was a puzzle to them. Moraine seemed to know more about him than he himself knew about himself. But he had a hard time dealing with her. Maybe it would go easier for the wise ones if they had to guess about him. But Matt winced as Amys began rubbing her ointment into the slashes on his chest. If anything, it felt like it smelled. Rand thought he had cause to wince. Bear shoved a silver cup at Matt. Drink, young man. Timson root and silver leaf will help your headaches if anything can. He didn't hesitate before gulping it down, with a shudder and a twisted face following. It's like, tastes like the inside of my boots. And my question is, how do you know that, Matt? What have you tried eating the inside of your boots? But he gives a seated bow, formal enough for a tyrant except for his being shirtless, and only spoiled a bit by a sudden grin. I thank you, wise one, and I won't ask if you added anything just to give it that memorable taste. But Bear and Sianna's soft laughter might have come because they had, or because they had not. Or it could be just because it's Aiel humor. But it seemed that it's the usual Matt had found its way to get on the good side of the women. Even Malayne gave him a brief smile. Rand turns to Ruark and asks if Cooladin thinks to make difficulties, then if he'd probably have to jump ahead of them. How do I go about telling the other clan chiefs about me and these? And he shifts his dragon-twined arms. The white-robed women on his side, cleaning the long gash in his hair now, deliberately avoided looking at them. Ruark's just like, there's no set formality. How could there be for a thing that will happen only once? This means it's not a tradition to have a Karakarn. It's a one-time gig. He's like, well, when there must be a meeting between clan chiefs, there are places where something like the Peace of Rurudeon holds. The closest to Cold Rocks, the closest to Rurudeon, is Alcair Dal. You could show proofs to the clan sept chiefs there. Matt's like, Alcair Dal. The Golden Bowl? Ruark nodded. A round canyon, though there's nothing golden about it. There's a ledge at one end, and a man who stands there can be heard by anyone in the canyon without raising his voice. That's also important for later. Rand frowns at the dragons on his forearms. He's not the only one to have been marked in some way in Rurudeon. Matt no longer spoke a few words of the old tongue now and then without knowing what he was saying. He understood since Rurudeon, though he did not appear to realize it. Egwene was even watching Matt, thoughtfully. She spent too much time with Aes Sedai. Ruark, can you send messengers out to the clan chiefs? How long will it take to ask them all to Alcair Dal? What will it take to make sure they come? Ruark is like, messengers will take weeks, and more weeks for everyone to gather. Ruark gesture took in all four wise ones. They can speak to every clan chief in his dreams in one night, to every sept chief and every wise one, to make sure no man takes it just for a dream. His wife, Amys, Riley, replies, I appreciate your confidence that we can move mountains, shade of my heart. Shade of my heart being a term in which you refer to the person who's most important in your life. Your significant other, if you will. Before she sits herself beside Rand with her ointment. He's like, that does not make it so. It would take several nights to do what you suggest, with little rest in them. But Rand caught her hand as she started to rub the sharp-smelling mixture on his cheek. Will you do it? She's like, are you so eager to destroy us? Then bites her lip vexedly as the white-cowled woman on Rand's other side started. Malene clapped her hands twice. Leave us! The woman in the white bowed before they head out and was like, you goad me like a needle burr next to the skin. Whatever they are told, those women will talk now what they should not know. It's like, well, that was your fault. Although Rand's Tavirin nature might have something to do with it. So she pulls her hand free, begins rubbing in the ointment with maybe more energy than was necessary, and it stung worse than it smelled. He's like, I don't mean to goad you, but there is no time. The Forsaken are loose, Amys, and if they find out where I am or what I plan... The Aiel woman did not seem surprised. Had they known already? 9 still live. Too many, and those that do not want to kill me think they can use me, and I have no time. If I knew a way to bring all the clan chiefs here now and make them accept me, I'd use it. And Amys' voice is as stony as her face, and she asks, what is it you plan? Will you ask, tell the chiefs to come to Alcair Dal? For a long moment she met his stare, but then she finally nodded. It actually was slightly grudgingly. But begrudged or not, some tension left him. And there was no way to win back 7 days lost, but perhaps he could avoid losing more. Moraine, still in Rurudeon with Avienda, held him here yet. He simply could not abandon her. And then he kind of changes the subject, if you will. It's a complete sharp turn. You knew my mother. And Egwene leaned forward, as intent as he and Matt, shook his head. And Amys is like, I knew her. Tell me about her, please. She finally says, Shaiel's story, as I know it, begins when I was still far derise my, more than a year before I gave up the spear. A number of us had ranged almost to the Dragon Wall together. One day we saw a woman, a golden-haired young Wetlander, in silks, with pack horses and fine mare to ride. A man we would have killed, of course, but she had no weapon beyond a simple knife at her belt. Some wanted to run her back to the Dragon Wall naked. Egwene blinked. She seemed continually surprised at how hard the Aiel were. Amys continued without pause. Yet she seemed to be searching, determinedly, for something. Curious, we followed, day by day, without letting her see. Her horse died, her food ran out, her water, but she did not turn back. She stumbled on afoot, until finally she fell and could not rise. We decided to give her water and ask her story. She was near death, and it was a full day before she could speak. Her name was Shail, Rand said when she hesitated. Where was she from? Why did she come here?
Shail, Bear said, was the name she took for herself. She never gave another in the time I knew her. In the old tongue, it would mean the woman who is dedicated.
Matt nodded in agreement, not seeming to realize what he had done. Lan eyed him thoughtfully over a silver cup of water.
There was bitterness in Shail in the beginning, she finished.
Sitting back on her heels beside Rand, Amis nodded.
She spoke of a child abandoned, a son she loved, a husband she did not love. Where, she would not say. I do not think she ever forgave herself for leaving the child. She would tell little beyond what she had to. It was for us she had been searching, for maidens of the spear. An Aes Sedai called Gitara Moroso, who had the foretelling, had told her that disaster would befall her land and her people, perhaps the world, unless she went to dwell among the maidens of the spear, telling no one of her going. She must become a maiden, and she could not return to her own land until the maidens had gone to Tar Valon.
She shook her head wonderingly.
You must understand how it sounded, then. The maidens go to Tar Valon. No Aiel had crossed the Dragon Wall since the day we first reached the Threefold Land. It would be another 4 years before Layman's crime brought us into the wetlands. And certainly no one, not Aiel, had ever become a maiden of the spear. Some of us thought her mad from the sun, but she had a stubborn will, and somehow we found ourselves agreeing to let her try.
Gitara Moroso, an Aes Sedai with a foretelling. Somewhere he had heard that name, but where? And he had a brother, a half-brother. Growing up, he had wondered what it would be like to have a brother or sister. Who and where? But Amis was going on.
Almost every girl dreams of becoming a maiden, and learns at least the rudiments of bow and spear, of fighting with hands and feet. Even so, those who take the final step and wed the spear discover they know nothing. It was harder for Shail. The bow she knew well, but she had never run as far as a mile, or lived on what she could find. A 10-year-old girl could beat her, and she did not even know what plants indicate water. Yet she persevered. In a year, she had spoken her vows to the spear, become a maiden, adopted into the Chumai Sept of the Tardad.
And eventually she had gone to Tar Valon with the maidens, to die on the slopes of Dragonmount. Half an answer, and leaving new questions. If he could only have seen her face.
You have something of her in your features, Sianna said, as though reading his thoughts.
She had settled herself cross-legged with a small silver cup of wine.
Less of Janduin.
Janduin? My father?
Yes, Sianna said.
He was clan chief of the Tardad then, the youngest in memory. Yet he had a way to him, a power. People listened to him and would follow him, even those not of his clan. He ended the blood feud between the Tardad and the Nakai after 200 years. He made alliance not only with the Nakai, but with the Rain, and the Rain were not so far short of blood feud. He very nearly ended the feud between Sharad and Goshin, as well, and might have, had Laemon not cut down the tree. Young as he was, it was he who led the Tardad and the Nakai, the Rain, and the Sharad to seek Laemon's blood price. Was. So he was dead now, too. Egwene wore sympathy on her face. Rand ignored it. He did not want sympathy. How could he feel loss for people he had never known? Yet, he did. How did Janduin die? The wise ones exchanged hesitant glances. At last, Amys said, "It was the beginning of the third year of the search for Laemon when Shaiel found herself with child. By the laws, she should have returned to the Threefold Land. A maiden is forbidden to carry the spear while she carries a child. But Janduin could forbid her nothing. Had she asked for the moon on a necklace, he would have tried to give it to her. So she stayed. And in the last fight before Tar Valon, she was lost, and the child was lost. Janduin could not forgive himself for not making her obey the law. He gave up his place as clan chief, Bear said. No one had ever done that before. He was told it could not be done, but he simply walked away. He went north with the young men to hunt Trollocs and Murdral in the Blight. It is a thing wild young men do, and maidens with less sense than goats. Those who returned said he was killed by a man, though. They said Janduin claimed this man looked like Shaiel, and he would not raise his spear when the man ran him through. Dead, then. Both dead. He would never lose his love for Tam, never stop thinking of him as a father. But he wished he could have seen Janduin and Shaiel just once. Egwene tried to comfort him, of course, the way women did. There was no use trying to make her understand that what he had lost was something he had never had. For memories of parents, he had Tam Althor's quiet laugh, and dinner remembrance of Kari Althor's gentle hands. That was as much as any man could want or need. She seemed disappointed, even a little upset with him, and the wise ones appeared to share the feeling to one degree or another, from Bear's openly disapproving frown to Malayne's sniff and ostentatious shifting of her shawl. Women never understood. Ruark and Land and Matt did. They left him alone, as he wanted. It's a bit of a long one, but I thought it was a really, really good read. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. There's a lot in it. We get the backstory of Shaiel. We get the backstory of Janduin. We get the backstory of Rand's origins. We know that he has a half-brother. That's a lot of information, because he knows that Shaiel and Janduin are dead, but he has a half-brother. He just doesn't know who it is, and it could be literally anyone. Literally anyone within a certain time frame, of course, but the half-brother would be older than him. That's about all we know, because if we recall correctly, they were in, was it the fourth? Or no, the third year of the search for Laemon. So 3 years. And then there was a year of becoming a
shield, or shield, a maiden of the spear. So it's about 4 years and then an additional time. So probably roughly around 5 years older than Ran, which puts him probably close to 24, 25-ish range, right? So anybody within that range could technically be his half-brother, but we don't know much other than whoever Shail was beforehand. I mean, we do know later on in the story, we find out, but as of now, the only person we would know would be Gitara Moroso, and that's an Aes Sedai, so somebody would have to have access to an Aes Sedai in the first place. So obviously, if you're a veteran of the series, you already know the answer, or maybe you're not quite there yet, but you have a general idea or something. What if you don't? Then I guess you'll find out when you finish the series. But if you're new, I mean, you could start figuring it out now if you want to. It'd be quite interesting. Everything gets interesting from here on out. Well, I mean, it's always been interesting, but it'll get a little bit more hectic. But that last ending part where basically he's like, I lost what I never had. So he doesn't understand how he's supposed to feel like he lost something when he clearly didn't lose something because he never had it. But the women don't seem to understand that, but the men do. And this is the differentiation between men and women. And I can kind of relate and sympathize, but not the same way that the women do, but more like how Ruark, Lan, and Matt do, in which it's something I don't quite comprehend, and thus it's more like the stoicism of man versus the empathy of women. And the empathy is like, you should feel sad because you lost something, and then get angry when that's not the result they were wanting, because it's not something that men particularly lean towards. It's very difficult for you to be like, oh, you had a brother, but he, you know, he died at sea from a shipwreck. And it's like, well, I never knew I had a brother, so how am I supposed to feel sad for it? Because I never had a connection with him. But everyone's like, no, you're supposed to feel sad. And that's not how it works for men. And I thought this was very well written and very realistic. And it's relatable. So I loved that Ruark, Lan, and Matt all knew what he wanted and treated him the way he wanted to, and it was better for him. But now he doesn't feel like eating when Malaine had the food brought, so he lied on the edge of the tent with one of the cushions under his elbow so he could watch the slope in the fog, the shrouded city. And the sun blasted the valley and surrounding mountains, burning the shadows. After a time, Matt comes over wearing a clean shirt, and he sits beside Ran without speaking, just looking down in the valley with a strange spear propped on his knee. And occasionally he felt at the cursive script carved into the black haft. And Rand asks, how's your head? And Matt jumps. Oh, it doesn't hurt anymore. He jerked his fingers away from the carving, folded his hands deliberately in his lap. Well, not as much anyway. Whatever they had mixed up, it did the trick. But then he stays quiet and Rand just lets him. He doesn't really want to talk either. And he could feel the time passing. Now, this is funny because these are two best buddies. They've been best buddies their entire lives. They've grown up together pretty much from infancy all the way up. So it's interesting that they're just sitting there and they're like best friends in a very awkward situation. But Rand's worried about the clan chiefs not reaching Alcair Dal one day sooner if Moraine appeared right before him right now. And that was only one part of it. Probably the least important. Then he notices Lan squatting easily atop some granite outcrop, or the same granite outcrop that Culloden had used, paying no mind to the sun. The warder was watching the valley, another man who did not want to talk. Ran refused a midday meal as well, and Egwene and the Wise Ones took turns trying to make him eat. They seemed to take his refusal calmly enough, but when he suggested returning to Rudion to look for Moraine, and Avienda for that matter, Malaine exploded, which is not surprising. Malaine has a temper to... You fool, man. No man can go twice to Ruidion. Even you would not come back alive. Oh, starve if you want to. And she throws a half around half a round loaf of bread at his head, and Matt catches it out of the air to calmly just start eating it. Rand's like, why do you want me to live? You know what the Aes Sedai said in front of Ruidian. I will destroy you. Why aren't you plotting with Culloden to kill me? And Matt just chokes, and Egwene plants her fist on her hips, ready to lecture, but Rand only paid attention to Mulaine. But she glared at him and left the tent. But Bear's the one who speaks up. Everyone thinks they know the prophecy of Ruidian, but what they know is what Wise One and clan chiefs have told them for generations. Not lies, but not the whole truth. The truth might break the strongest man. But Rand asked what that truth is. She glanced at Matt, then said, in this case, the whole truth, the truth known only to Wise Ones and clan chiefs before this, is that you are our doom. Our doom and our salvation. Without you, no one of our people will live beyond the last battle. Perhaps not even until the last battle. That is prophecy and truth. With you, he shall spill out the blood of those who call themselves Aiel as water on sand, and he shall break them as dried twigs. Yet the remnant of a remnant shall he save, and they shall live. A hard prophecy, but this has never been a gentle land. She met his gaze without flinching. A hard land and a hard woman. So, when she starts out with everyone thinks they know the prophecy of Ruidian, it's the general gist of every prophecy you are aware of is only known a specific way. Now, in general, prophecies are not known well by everyone. Even if you have scholars poring over the content, they could still get it wrong. Prophecy is not cut and dry. I mentioned that earlier. In this particular situation, they tell everyone, you know, that the doom and salvation. But what they haven't told people was that he's going to basically spill their blood like water on sand. He will break them like dried twigs, but a remnant of a remnant shall he save, and they shall live. Their goal, their game plan, is to make that remnant of a remnant be as big of a remnant as possible. That's their goal. But in order for them to survive as a remnant of a remnant, he must survive. So it's this great, like, symbiotic relationship. It's awesome. I love it because it works out really well. And as you finish the series, it'll line up just like that, too. And it's just so much fun. Rand rolls back over to keep watching at the valley. Everybody left except for Matt. But in the mid-afternoon, he spots a figure climbing the mountain, scrambling up warily. It's Avienda. Matt had been right. She was bare. She was born, showing some effects of the sun as well. Aiel or not, it was only her hands and face that were sun-darkened, and the rest of her looked decidedly red. This is important, because you gotta remember the Aiel are basically Irish nomads. Really tall, superhuman Irish nomads. That's basically what they are. And they can basically run with horses, outrun them stamina-wise, and survive in places that are terrible for people to survive in, like the Waste. These guys are like crazy. They're like ninjas. But he's glad to see her. She disliked him, but only because she thought he had mistreated Elaine. Simplest of motives. Not the prophecy or doom, not for dragons on his arms, but because he was the dragon reborn, but just a simple human reason. He almost looked forward to those cool, challenging stares. When she saw him, she froze, but there was nothing cool in her blue-green eyes. Her gaze made the sun seem cold, and he should have been burned to ash on the spot. Matt's like, Rant, I don't think I would turn my back on her if I were you. And Rand has a tired sigh escape him, and he's like, of course, if she had been in one of those glass columns, she knew. Bear, Mulaine, and the others, all years to grow used to it, but for Avienda, it was a fresh wound with no scab. It's like, well, no wonder she hates me now. But the Wise Ones scurry out to meet Avienda, hurrying her away into another tent. The next time Rand saw her, she wore a bulky brown skirt and loose white blouse with a shawl looped around her arms, and she did not look very happy about the clothes. But she saw him watching, and the fury on her face, the sheer animal rage, was enough to make him turn away. Shadows were beginning to stretch to the far mountains by the time that Moraine appeared, falling and staggering back to her feet as she climbed, as sunburned as Avienda. He was startled to see that she had no clothes on either. Women were crazy. That was all. Lan leapt from the stone outcrop and ran down to her, scooping her into his arms, and he ran upslope, probably faster than he had gone down, cursing and shouting for the wise ones by turns. Moraine's head lulled on his shoulder, and the wise ones came out to take her, Mullane physically barring his way when he tried to follow them into the tent. Lan was left stalking up and down outside, pounding a fist into his hand. Like, this is the most emotion we have seen from Lan, I think, in the story as of this point. Like, he is losing it. For a stoic guy, that's a lot of emotion. But he's still probably stone-faced. He's just very frustrated. But Rand rolled on his back and looked at the low end of the low tent roof. And he had 3 days saved. And he should have felt glad that Moraine and Avienda were back and safe. But his relief was all for the days saved. Time was everything, and he had to be able to choose his own ground. Maybe he still could. Matt's like, what are you going to do now? He's like, something you should like. I'm going to break the rules. And I love Matt's response. It's amazing. I meant, are you going to get something to eat? Me? I'm hungry. Like, that's like the best response. But Rand laughed in spite of himself. He just had something to eat. He didn't even care if he ate again. But Matt stared at him as if he were crazy, and that just made him laugh even harder. Not crazy, but for the first time, somebody was going to learn what it meant that he was the Dragon Reborn. He was going to break the rules in a way that no one expected. And I love that line where he's talking to Matt. He's like, something you should like. I'm going to break the rules. And you wonder what those rules are, don't you? Well, I guess you'll just have to find out, won't you? But that's it for the chapter. And it was quite the riveting chapter if you put everything together. And it's actually a very interesting, intriguing. We get a little bit of emotional backstory on family. We get the reaction from the Aiel. We get the clan chiefs and the wise ones talking to him about things. Get the return of Avienda, the return of Moraine, Lan's reactions and all that. It's a busy chapter/episode. So I guess keep looking forward to that. But yeah, what did you guys think? I know there's more I'd like to say, but I can't say unless I ruin something else. So let's look forward to that new episode or chapter whenever we get to it. But yeah, let me know what you guys thought. I'd love to hear your thoughts and your comments and if you thought I did a good job or not. And especially would like to know if you enjoyed the read-along, where I read along in the voices and narrations and all that. You can reach out through Facebook or Twitter/X. Tales of Red Arm on Facebook, at Tales of Red Arm on Twitter/X. You can also join the Discord and chat with me basically every day. A quicker pace. I typically am on Discord at all times. But if you don't have it or don't want to use it or don't know how to use it or whatever, if you don't feel comfortable with it, you can reach out through Facebook or Twitter/X. Or if you're a bit more old fashioned, you want to be able to reach at me, you can reach out through email, which is talesofaredarm@gmail.com. And, I'd love to hear from you guys. If you would like to know how to use Discord or anything like that, and if you're interested in that, you can also email me and I'll give you a little quick rundown of how to put it together and everything. It's pretty easy. It's simple enough to use. But yeah, I'm in chat on Discord all the time, but if that is not the way you want to go, there are plenty other ways to get a hold of me, and I look forward to hearing from you guys. So thanks everybody for hanging out. We got chapter 35 coming up for the next episode/chapter. And I'm pretty excited to keep on moving. We're already the second half of the book, so that should be a nice progression. You're either going to be entirely infuriated with the next chapter because of what goes on, or you're going to find it hilarious, or yeah, there's a couple different ways you could go with it, but we'll have to see that the next time. So Thanks, everybody, for hanging out. Hope you join me for the next one. Until then.
We drink all night and dance all day, and on the girls we'll spend our pay. And when we're done, then we'll away to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and some of the girls be they short or tall, and follow young Matt wherever he goes to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and some of the girls be they short or tall, then follow Lord Matt wherever he goes to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll give a yell with a bloody curse, and hog the maids, it could be worse, as we ride away with the dark ones first, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. Yeah!